Okay, so hello everyone and welcome to the INSS conference. We are here at the 12th INSS conference, and with me now is Mr. David Makovsky. David Makovsky is a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute and director of the project on Arab-Israeli relations. He teaches at Johns Hopkins University, and in 2013 and 2014, he was a senior advisor to the U.S. Special Envoy for Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. Welcome, David. Thank you for coming.
Delighted to be with you and be at the INSS conference.
So we'll start. I'll start by plugging into your words at the panel yesterday. Yeah. You actually presented a very interesting idea, I found, and that is that the Trump peace plan should be put forward during a very specific time period. You mentioned end of March till end of May, which is when the Israeli elections will be taking place and the future Israeli coalition will be formed. My question to you is this really feasible? And is it correct? Do you think that this, when you spoke in the panel, you referred to Netanyahu who will win and that Trump should propose it to Netanyahu? Mm-hmm. My question is also if this is correct to any other leader who may be elected.
Okay, the way I phrased it was I thought the Prime Minister was going to approach the White House, mm-hmm. that after April 9th, after the victory, it should be put on the table after the Prime Minister has won, if the polls hold, which he's got a commanding lead, we'll see. These things could have the different dynamic. Mm-hmm. But if indeed, the Attorney General Mandelblit puts forward a pending indictment before the elections, let's say in February, and even though the Prime Minister may win, he may feel that this limits his number of coalition partners. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, two different huge stories in Israel, which was the legal story for Netanyahu and the idea of a Trump plan, may meet. And they meet if the Prime Minister asks the White House, you could help me out here by putting forward your plan, and this could open up vistas, political possibilities of coalition partners that I wouldn't have otherwise. Because people would think if he's going to be indicted, who's going to join that government? Mm-hmm. It's very limited. But if he feels that he could somehow almost jump over the indictment by being a peacemaker, well, all of a sudden, in the name of peace, will other coalition partners be open to joining him? Now, and he would tell the White House, look, by having a more moderate government, I would have more flexibility in what I can do. So you're not just helping me, you're really helping yourself, mm-hmm. by creating that kind of political space that doesn't really exist today. Now, of course, how will the Palestinians react? I think anything that Trump says, they may say no to. But if the Arab states believe, look, it doesn't have to be exactly this plan, but it could be some form of dialogue that would be useful. I don't, Netanyahu might say, look, what do I have to lose, really? I mean, if I don't go this way, then the world is kind of closing in on me. So he may see this as an opening. The point would be is, does it really create more political space for peace? That will be the broader thing beyond his political survival. But I think the catalyst person behind this is not necessarily driven by the White House, it's driven by the Prime Minister looking for a way of trying to solve a bunch of problems at once, get around his legal issues, have more political space, and being on the right side of Trump, on the good side of Trump.
So I think that perhaps is a key thing to state, because right. when you just spoke, it appears that your underlying assumption is that Netanyahu wants to make peace.
That was my...
But what you said in the panel yesterday, which I think resonated, right. is that Netanyahu will have a difficult time saying no to Trump.
Right.
And perhaps that is the motivation
right.
that we should take into account.
No. That is definitely true that this... When I meant about opening up the space, it gives him also space with the United States. So I do think that this is not the White House trying to say, how do we help ensure Netanyahu wins? Because I don't think they do it before the election, but after the election. But how do we give, if we read the polls in Washington the way they read the polls in Israel, that he's the likely winner, what is the best constellation for us? So they might be open, but I think the initiative, mm-hmm. comes out of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Now, if we speak about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and you've been in this arena for so long, I want to ask you, because I've seen your website, Settlements and Solutions, and you uploaded a clip, is a two-state solution still feasible? That was quite a while ago. So my question to you is, 2 years later, I think the clip was created in 2017, is a two-state solution still feasible? Right, is it in the cards?
I'm glad you asked it that way, because, you know, people say, well, there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. Our website is to say there's a way. We don't know if there's a will that we're not speaking to. We just, what we thought needed to be said, and we really hope everybody listening to this podcast goes to Google and just puts in Settlements and Solutions, and it'll come up. It's free. You don't have to register or anything. But suddenly what you'll see is the actual map, and you'll see the interface between 139 settlements, their growth for each one over 10 years, and how they voted in the last three Israeli elections. And you will see also the interface, the nexus point between these different settlements and peace plans. And we think that's important because we want to open up in America a more nuanced, differentiated conversation about settlements. In Israel, that conversation in some ways exists. People talking about the blocks, the non-blocks, the barrier. America, these ideas are still not really that known, and we think that people need to see it. So part of the way we did it is we actually had satellite photographs of every single settlement. It can only go up to a certain level of resolution for Israeli security. We don't want Hamas being able to zoom in and you're using our website, but it gives you an idea. And then people will say, oh, I get it now. I see that under certain, even the Abbas plan, certain Israeli settlements will be Israel. Mm-hmm. People don't know that.
Yeah.
And the blocks and the non-blocks are not the same. Oh, I didn't know that. And so I've made, believe it or not, over 130 visits to American college campuses. Yeah. So I know firsthand that people, unless they see things, you know, they don't get it. And social media is very important, and this is interactive. So we're hoping people will go to the website, Settlements and Solutions, and see for themselves where, in our belief, that there are ways that Israel can keep maybe up to 80% of the settlers that are in, you know, about less than 8% of the land. Of course, they would have to give land swaps, land exchanges, territorial exchanges. But in our view, this is not impossible, but you got to want to do it.
Yeah,
and so the idea is, we're not saying there's a will, we're saying there's a way.
Yeah.
And that's what the thing is about, and I hope everyone goes on and sees for themselves.
It's interesting that you should talk about the, I don't want to say ignorance, but perhaps the lack of knowledge on the in America regarding these settlements, because I think that in Israel there's a lack of knowledge regarding what's happening in America, American Jews, the American Jewish community.
So they should start a website too.
But this is also my way of asking you, at the beginning of the month, earlier this month, I think on the 2nd of January, you published an open letter. It wasn't a letter, it was more questions. In Yediot Achronot, it was in Hebrew, together with Dennis Ross, to potential candidates in the Israeli general elections. So if you could please speak about it a bit in English, so that our English listeners, and also if you received any responses, and how was this
taken? Dennis and I thought that this election was going to be so overwhelmingly a referendum on Netanyahu's leadership, the legal dimension and the like, that we thought that what's going to get lost is the issue of Israeli foreign policy decisions, including the issue, frankly, of Israel's relationship with the diaspora. And one of our main points there is that Israelis should see this issue not just as an Israel diaspora relationship, but as a national security issue for Israel. And this has been said at the INSS conference as well. And we feel, the United States just did an MOU at the end of President Obama's term, bipartisan in Congress, with $38 billion for Israel for the next 10 years. There is no country on earth that it basically has America's credit card the way Israel does, in the same way. That doesn't come from nowhere. That's because they're American Jews. They really care. Not only Jews, but the Jews have spearheaded this. And I think there needs to be an understanding that this isn't, ze nechmad, it's nice to have Jews with us, but it's crucial that these two peoples don't go, that, you know, the Jewish people of Israel and the Jewish people of America don't go in opposite directions. This is national security implications for Israel, and we wanted people to put this on the agenda in an election year, and we felt that the only way to do that is to get into the Hebrew press. In terms of the feedback, we've heard nice things, but we realize also that there's other things going on, and that the Mandelblit issue and the light are going to dominate this election discourse. But we felt that as two people been following this real juncture between Israel's relations with America and with Israel's relation with American Jewry, that we hope that there will be some attention to what we consider key foreign policy issues, including Russia, Iran, Syria, etc.
So indeed, we at INSS are very minded towards that. And there was a panel, like you said, yesterday at the conference regarding American Jewry and Israel. Yeah. I thank you very much for your time and for this interview.
Delighted. And I wish INSS success in all its important work.
Thank you very much. And join us for more such interviews on the INSS website.